You're listening to Screen Heroes on the Heroes Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome back to Screen Heroes, the movie podcast here on the Heroes Podcast Network. I am your regular host, Derek, and I have with me my two lovely, long-time running co-hosts, Ryan.
Hello.
And Ray.
Hello.
Hello. We are nearing our 5-year anniversary of the show. So we're recording this on November 10th. The episode will go out on the 12th. Our 5-year anniversary is December 2nd, which is right after a recording day and right before our release day. So we're planning some stuff for our 5-year anniversary, which is cool. Looking forward to that. We're going to be talking kind of about our history of the show and other things that we've covered, things that we've liked, things that we haven't over the years, things that maybe we wish we had just totally ignored existed. I'm sure that'll come up a couple of times, but I'm looking forward to it. It should be fun. We are reviewing Jonah Hex this week, the 2010 DC Comics film, in part to tie into our latest tournament in the Screen Heroes forum on Facebook. So we have the Screen Heroes podcast forum. You can join us and talk movies and TV with us. We post memes and polls and news and tournaments. We live stream the show. And Ray, you want to tell people about the currently running tournament?
Sure. So the currently running tournament, it's the best DC casting. So we're actually judging on which actors fill their roles the best. Right now, we're still in the first round of things, so it's not too far in to jump into things if y'all wanted to do that.
Yeah, the matchup you launched today was, what, Eisenberg and Thurman? Jesse, yes. Eisenberg as Lex Luthor and Uma Thurman as Ivy.
So this does include all DC live action films, not just the DCEU.
Right. So who would you guys pick from those two? Who is your best cast between the two of them?
Oh, Uma Thurman.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, so you can come join us in the Screen Heroes podcast forum on Facebook, and you can vote along with us as we go. Lots of fun stuff there, and you can always chat during the show. So there you have it. I do want to give people a sneak peek at what we have coming in December. So Ryan's birthday is at the end of the month here, and we always like to do kind of a birthday episode where the birthday person gets to pick their topic. But Ryan decided it's 2020, and since this year is really like 4 years, he's going to pick 4 episodes.
That's right.
And so instead, we have Merry Cagemas this December, where we will be covering
or Nicolas Happy Hanukkah Cage. We're not really sure on the title yet. One of those two.
Basically, each one of us picked a Nicolas Cage movie that we will review, and then we are reviewing one together that we've agreed upon together. So we know that that one, the final one, will be Family Man, you know, because, you know, feelings, oh yeah, it's cute. Yeah. But the other ones maybe still nebulous. I know a couple that we've thrown out there are Face Off and Vampire's Kiss and Con Air. So
too bad it turns out Vampire's Kiss is impossible to actually watch if you want to watch it.
Yeah, I'm really disappointed because I've never seen that one. And yeah, it's not streaming anywhere that I can find it anyway. And in order to buy a DVD of it, you have to shell out like $55.
I imagine it's so sought after because back when memes were young, the scene where he insanely shouts the alphabet went viral, and it, like, 30 years after the movie had already come out, and one of the most crazy faces he makes has become meme worthy. So I think people just wanted to get the movie to see where the memes came from, but
it's also just a bonkers performance by him. Oh, yeah. Like, all the way through. So
absolutely incredibly weird.
So unless something changes in the next couple of weeks where that becomes more readily available, we'll have to pick something else. But that's what you have to look forward to. The rest of the year, we're looking at a 10th anniversary Tron Legacy retrospective, maybe looking back at The Rocketeer now that both of those are available on Disney Plus, Those are coming up as well later this month. But let's talk news. I'm going to get a really quick one out of the way, just informational, really. Free Guy and Death on the Nile have both been pushed by Disney out of 2020. Both of those were going to be releases later in December. That is not happening anymore. And they will be released sometime next year, which leaves Wonder Woman 1984 as the final like tentpole major theatrical film slated for 2020. It's Christmas Day, and I'm going to go out there and say that that's not happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seems accurate.
So there you have it. I think that's not really surprising to anybody who's been following things pretty closely. I was hoping maybe Free Guy might get a straight to streaming offer just based on what it is. It's not, you know, a massive blockbuster or anything, and I'd be willing to rent that for the same as I did Bill and Ted. So yeah, there you go. Anything you guys want to add to that?
Nope.
Okay, cool. Then we will move on to bigger news. So Johnny Depp and Amber Heard have been in a long legal battle about their marital affairs. There's been, both parties have talked about abuse coming from the other. There's been a lot of court cases about it, and Johnny Depp recently lost a libel case where the judge confirmed that most of the counts in the libel case turned out to at least be supported by evidence. And so basically directly after that, almost like Warner Brothers had like a Google ping announcement waiting, they more or less forced Johnny Depp to voluntarily resign from Fantastic Beasts. He's playing Grindelwald, or what was playing Grindelwald. So he has now been kicked out. He's not doing it anymore. There are talks about how, you know, who his replacement might be, and he is still going to get paid. He has a pay or play contract, so he still will make eight figures on what might wind up being a single scene in the movie. Any thoughts on this, guys?
So I know a lot of people want Colin Farrell back. He cannot come back because of his schedule and commitment to the Batman. If shooting moves at all, that could change. But right now, Colin Farrell is not able to do it. But they already asked him.
Interesting, because they've already delayed it. It's now set for July of 2022. So that's pretty far off. I'd be surprised if the Batman is what's holding up that conversation.
That is the statement Colin Farrell put out. So it may be sequels that he's connected to. It could be a bigger picture kind of thing. It could be press tours or promotions. Who knows?
Fair.
But that is the answer he has given.
Ryan, anything from you on this?
I mean, I'm not really a big Fantastic Beasts fan, so I don't really care. But obviously, I don't like that Johnny Depp is losing roles because of what seems clearly to be abuse against him. But, you know, we weren't there, so it's hard to make a full judgment on it just based off the evidence presented. So, but you know, it is what it is, and I'm glad he's going to get a full payday at least.
Just like some opinion mode here. From what I gather, the two of them just brought out the worst in each other, and neither party is completely innocent. But it does seem that Johnny has more proof of abuse coming from Amber Heard than she does against him. And so maybe he's the lesser of the two evils. If Warner Brothers is going to make him step down, I can't imagine that she'll keep her job at Aquaman 2 for very much longer.
Let's hope.
And there is a big movement to have her replaced. You know, people it was almost immediate that was the response. She has returned for some reshoots for the Snyder Cut, so we'll at least see that. But Aquaman 2, of course, hasn't begun filming, so there's still plenty of time to swap her out or reduce the role or what have you. The rumored frontrunner to replace Johnny Depp, though, is Mads Mikkelsen, who, I mean, that's fine. I don't really have a strong opinion either way. I actually really liked Colin Farrell's version of the character before he changed into Johnny Depp. So I don't really have a whole lot riding on this one. I don't know about you guys.
I don't think any of us were like massive fans of the Fantastic Beasts movies so far. But, you know, I know Rachel had some interest in where it was going. And at least I think I remember that.
So as far as the Fantastic Beasts movies go, I was a fan of the Harry Potter books, and I thought the first three movies were really magical, to, you know, use that word. They just brought out a lot of fun for a whole family flick. They got really dark. They got and they cut out just a ton of the lightheartedness that these child characters are experiencing. So the movies, as far as quality goes, dipped. Not any part fault of the actors. I think especially the children, they just got better as they grew up, even the side ones. And then Fantastic Beasts came out, and you know, they're basing five movies off of a subsequent textbook kind of thing that Rowling wrote, so there's not much content there. And from the get-go, it seemed like they just wanted to do a Dumbledore prequel, which, if that was the case, just say it. The Fantastic Beasts title feels off. I feel like it should have been, you know, Newt Scamander.
Except that Newt's like the least interesting character, right, in the movie.
Right. So. Or it should have been Albus Dumbledore.
Or so, Queenie and her adventures.
Yeah, yeah.
That would have been better.
Most of the other characters are way more interesting, but it does seem like they just introduce things to introduce them, you know, and Rowling is just coming up with ideas as it goes along, and not all of them are good. The fact that Nagini is a woman who is cursed, I know, made a lot of fans angry, because the subtext behind it was pretty racist. Go ahead and look that up. I'm not going to cite all these articles, but that is what I remember. So, yeah.
Believe you.
I'm just not looking forward to any of them. I think I'm going to drop them. And of course, Rowling being a trash person in 2020 just makes me like the Harry Potter books a lot less than I used to. That's my hot take.
I don't know. Is that really a hot take? I mean, a lot of people, I think, share that opinion.
Right? Like, it might be a popular hot take. I know a lot of people are struggling with their fandom. How much do they let Rowling get away with before they're completely done? Like, can you still love your Hogwarts house and hate J.K. Rowling? And I think that's something we've all had to deal with in the last like 3 to 5 years, separating the art from the artist or throwing it all in the dumpster when it comes to problematic people.
Yeah.
Agreed. Lovely. All right. Well, moving on to more positive news. So WandaVision has officially wrapped production. It's ready to go for its release later this year, which I'm sure most of us are very excited about, especially with
still no release date officially announced.
And we're running out of time. Like, come on, guys.
I mean, it's obviously going to be like a week or two after The Mandalorian stops, right? Like, that's
I would imagine.
Yeah.
Maybe the same night, like just have them both.
There,
like,
you go.
You know, one ends and one begins is like a big way to send off the year. But yeah, I that's kind of what I'm expecting as well. So the good news is they've done some really interesting stuff with this. So the first episode, at least, was actually filmed in front of a live studio audience using a lot of the same technologies used to film sitcoms, especially old classic black and white sitcoms.
And practical effects, everything was done in camera, no CG or anything like that for Wanda's powers.
And Feige consulted with Dick Van Dyke and had him on set for part of it.
Well, that's just wonderful. I didn't
like
know that.
How great is that?
Dick Van Dyke is awesome. That's wonderful. I mean, I loved growing up watching Bewitched and I Dream of Jeannie and just, you know, all of those classic shows. I watched them on Nick at Night, right?
I was an I Love Lucy girl.
Definitely.
I loved Lucy.
I liked the ones that had a little bit of magic to them, you know.
And I liked a strong female comedian. I thought she was just fantastic.
Well, as a Trekkie, I have nothing but respect for Miss Ball. But we're talking WandaVision, and it's exciting, and I'm really excited about it. Not a whole lot else to say on it, other than I'm just really stoked.
There were some promotional photos released also, but no new trailer or anything like that. So I think there was something about Feige said there's going to be a lot to unpack for Marvel fans. So I'm curious if he means like Easter eggs or like there's just going to be a huge change in the cinematic universe with this show.
From what I gathered, it was more of, if you've been following along, then there's going to be a ton of little references and Easter eggs that you're going to appreciate. But if you haven't, and this is your introduction to the MCU, then that's going to be okay. And don't get me wrong, I will be glad if they're able to somehow pull that off and bring in a new group of fans. But I just find that a very difficult line to walk.
I don't believe this is anybody's entry point.
Yeah, I mean, come on. Who hasn't seen at least one of the movies at this point?
It just seems unlikely, right? Especially because it's all, well, almost all available on Disney Plus, right? So if you're excited about WandaVision and you haven't seen anything else before it, you'd think you'd at least sit down and watch the Avengers movies.
I mean, honestly, if I hadn't seen it, I'd at least want to see the movies that Wanda and Vision are in.
Right. Yeah. So that's kind of a weird concept, but there hasn't really been a movie yet that required you to see the whole MCU. I mean, you could have still watched Infinity War and Endgame without having seen the previous 20 movies. Mm-hmm. You know, sure. Now, I don't know. So we'll see. I'm really looking forward to it, though. Everything that I've seen about it looks great. Apparently, Paul Bettany is now thinking he should have done sitcoms his entire career. He had so much fun with it, which, I mean, that's a good sign because I love him. So if he had that much fun, I imagine his performance is going to reflect that.
So he had a funny story. Of course, they're doing press, and of course, it's all from their homes. But they had a funny story that when they shot their first big kiss, that one of them had a cold, and they had to immediately go get tested for coronavirus. But they did it after the kiss, so they both had to go get tested.
That's funny.
Luckily, it was just a cold and everything, but the two of them were really grossed out.
Sure. I can only imagine. I mean, that's, you know, that's not great in a non-pandemic world, right? So,
right.
Totally. All right. Well, anything else you guys want to cover in the news world before we move on to our main topic?
The Rock is rebooting Scorpion King, and She-Hulk is going to start filming soon, and it's filming under the working title of Libra, and it's a nod to her being a lawyer. It's the scales and everything. So that's it. That's news.
Also, I think doesn't Daredevil come back to Marvel at this point, this month?
This month.
Yeah.
I think it's the 29th.
Which
I
means think. Potentially Matt Murdock could show up in She-Hulk show.
Yes.
I would love that.
I think that's a better fit than the Spider-Man movie. Everybody's like, look, put him in Spider-Man 3 now. That's already going to be packed out. Give it to me in She-Hulk. I mean,
just because they're in New York together doesn't mean anything.
Right.
Come on. I think it works better on the series scale anyway, right? Because again, like Daredevil going up against Thanos seems kind of silly, but him being in a courtroom with She-Hulk makes perfect sense.
Yeah, can you imagine them going against each other in the courtroom? That would be awesome, seeing out of character doing that.
I know that Vincent D'Onofrio wants to come back for the Spider-Man stuff. Mm-hmm. However, I just don't think that's good. Like, he bashed a dude's head in with a door in like episode 3 or 4. That's not Tom Holland Spider-Man.
Hey, maybe it's time to make him a little more adult.
Maybe.
I mean, there
Kingpin
is this whole
be the one that runs the Sinister Six or Sinister Seven or whatever, the Spider-Man villain gang. Have him be the one that runs it and puts them together. I mean, I could see it. Vincent D'Onofrio is so good, he'll make it work.
Wow.
It's going to have to be a soft reboot of the characters anyway, right? Because, I mean, yeah. At this point, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Netflix shows have pretty much been told they're only semi-canon.
Yeah.
So. Right. I mean, basically, as long as they're not contradicted, right?
Right.
They can be canon. And the good news is a lot of the actors on the Netflix shows wanted to continue, so they have opportunities to bring these people back if they want to, because of just how the contracts have worked out. So if they want to bring back D'Onofrio and have him be, you know, at least even just as a character in a show like She-Hulk, he doesn't have to be the bad guy, like the big bad, but he can exist in that universe and kind of keep the characters moving along and eventually maybe do, you know, V2 of the Defenders. You could use almost the exact same cast, and I don't think people are going to complain too much.
I agree.
Because the cast was never the problem with those shows.
Well, except maybe Iron Fist for some people.
I mean, I don't think the casting was the problem, because he's much better in season 2, and he's much better when he teams up with Luke Cage.
Sure, yeah. For you they were, but for a lot of people they still had issues with his casting. So, yeah. You know, I tend to agree with you, but, you know, that was probably the worst casting of the Marvel shows, if you ask in general. So,
I guess if you had to rank them, yeah, that's fair. All right, well, we're going to go ahead and take a short break, and when we come back, we will be talking the DC Comics hit, Jonah Hex. We'll be right back. All right, and we're back. Let's do this. Let's talk 2010's Jonah Hex, starring Josh Brolin, Megan Fox, John Malkovich, Michael Fassbender, Will Arnett, Michael Shannon, Lance Reddick. Like, there's just so many freaking
Jeffrey
people.
Dean Morgan.
Nope.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Uncredited, but yes, he's in there.
There are so many good actors in this movie that it's almost magical. It's as bad as it is. This film has a 4.7 on IMDb. It is DC's worst box office showing of all time. It comes in behind 1984's Supergirl. Okay. This movie brought in worldwide just over $11 million on a $47 million budget. And the estimated at-home disc sales between DVD and Blu-ray are over 10 million. It almost doubled its box office take home. This movie was a massive flop. Just across the board, there's reports of a lot of behind the scenes production issues that I'm going to let Ray talk about a bit, because she looked into them. And honestly, I'm going to be totally honest, cards on the table. When we decided to do this movie, in my head, the movie I was picturing was Van Helsing. I had not seen this before. I thought I had seen it, but
Van Helsing is a much different movie.
It is
not necessarily much better, but certainly more enjoyable.
Yeah, yeah. I got the
choice.
Two.
I'll watch Van Helsing all every time, 10 out of 10 times over this movie.
I can't blame you. After seeing, because I now know I've seen them both now, because I saw Van Helsing in theaters. And yeah, man, I can't blame you. Ray, why don't you talk a bit about some of the production issues that may have caused the movie to be just slightly below par?
Okay, so what I found when I was digging is that the script was in production as far back as like 2003-2004. It got zero traction for quite a long time, obviously, since it came out in 2010. There was a director attached to it. He left 2 years prior to shooting. Then they got this director, Hayward, to shoot it. Warner Brothers hated what Hayward did, and so they hired a completely different director for reshoots. They ended up reshooting 66 pages of script in only 12 days. So everybody was overworked and incredibly exhausted. And if you notice, the movie is a bit inconsistent, it's because Hayward and this guy's visions were completely different. And, you know, Michael Shannon and Will Arnett, you're probably thinking to yourself, hey, I know those guys. Why are their parts so small? Well, it's because first of all, they thought they were going to get sequels. So they immediately wanted to set up people for a bigger universe. And then there's also the fact that their parts were cut down to almost nothing. Maybe, you know, Will Arnett gets two scenes, I think, and Michael Shannon gets that one little cameo.
And also neither of them played a role that was fitting of their abilities, and neither played to their strength. You know, Will Arnett, we know, is a comedy actor more than anything else. Not a comedy actor in this.
Nope. There not was even no a jokes. Little.
That was apparently a draw for him. Part of the reason he took the role was it gave him an opportunity to not play a comedic character.
That was not a strength of this movie.
So. No, absolutely not. And I completely agree. Like, I have no problem with actors stepping out of their comfort zone. We've seen it work time and time again. And Will Arnett is not a bad actor by any means. So it could have worked for him. This was just a bad movie.
Yes.
And so Josh Brolin turned down the film initially. And Megan Fox turned it down. The original script was kind of disgusting and misogynistic. And
this one wasn't much better, to be honest.
No, Josh Brolin made them rewrite quite a few things. And that's what got Megan Fox to sign on, because she was a bit more of a badass and less of a damsel. And then... he also had them play up some tongue-in-cheek situations, so it was more cheesy. And he was hoping that the cheesiness was going to be, you know, the good cheesy instead of the really bad cheesy like this was. Because that's what it was. It was the bad cheesy.
It's kind of crazy when you think about it. So this is a short movie. It is 81 minutes. And you're saying that 66 pages were rewritten, and the kind of the rule is that...
No, we're reshot. I think the entire script was rewritten.
Okay. So, I mean, 66 minutes approximately of the movie were completely reshot of an 81-minute movie. Like, it's kind of crazy to think about, because we discuss how Justice League, this is such a big deal about, you know, the Snyder Cut and everything like that. But I never realized that a previous DC film had gone through just as many reshoots as Justice League had with Whedon. Yeah, this is almost the entire movie was reshot. And that's just for what it is, considering how small the budget was, and how big the cast is. That's just really surprising. So let's try this. What did you like about the movie?
So I didn't know much. I hadn't seen this before. And I didn't know much about Jonah Hex. Jonah Hex showed up on a few episodes of Legends of Tomorrow. And that's about all I knew about him from those. That was what I saw in those episodes, which wasn't much. But his character is actually pretty cool. You know, he has like some not Constantine personality vibes, but similar like mysticism. And being able to communicate with the dead. And if you watch this or listen to our show, then you know that I'm a big fan of like the more mystical and magical DC and Marvel stuff. So I thought that was really neat, especially you're seeing it in, you know, cowboy times, essentially, which most of the mystical and magical stuff is more modern. But that was basically where it ended. I mean, I liked the, you know, when he touched the dead, all the stuff that happened, you know, they would start burning up and he could communicate with them. And I thought that was cool, but that was basically the only highlight of the movie for me.
I honestly was going to say something very similar, is that I really liked the bringing back the dead look to it. And I liked when Josh Brolin had one-on-one conversations, because he seemed like he did a lot better with that than he did with the big action scenes or big group settings. And I think the costumes pretty much nailed it. But
he was struggling with that prosthetic, though.
Yeah. Yeah. He absolutely was. It looked okay. It looked straight out of the comics, but he also looked pained.
He did. But also, like, if you watch the movie, then you know that he gets branded with, like, the initials of his enemy that killed his family or whatever. And then it's implied that he takes an axe and heats it up and like carves up his face to hide the initials so he doesn't have to look at him anymore. But why, if you were going to do that, would you just leave this one little stringer across your mouth?
Right.
You know what I mean? That makes it impossible to talk and makes it so that you can't actually see any, and nobody that looks at you looks at anything other than your weird little goober that crosses across your mouth.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's a fair question.
It didn't make a lot of sense to me, to be honest.
No. And I'm with you guys on the bringing back of the dead. And I think the effects, the actual visual effects looked pretty good for those sequences as well, especially given the budget for the movie. The problem is, to my understanding, that's not a power Jonah Hex normally has.
Right.
So the coolest part of the movie is not actually from the origins of the character, which is, well, it's just, it makes it a little less, it makes it more disappointing. Right. That
well, but that means that if they didn't do that, then the movie would have been absolutely terrible. And there wouldn't have been any redeeming qualities. So that's, I'm a good point with it.
That's a good point. I do agree with Ray as well. I think the production value was pretty good. The costuming, the sets, I think that all looked pretty good. There were very few moments where I thought the movie looked bad. The problems all seemed to be with the writing and kind of the performances behind the terrible writing, I think were the main issues for me. Like, there's, the writing is bad in this movie. The one-liners are not good.
Yeah, when John Malkovich is phoning in his performance, then that means that you did something real bad for the writing.
And he's done some stinkers. Like, it's not like he's this grade A, never failed actor, but this is not good. John Malkovich, I think, was the worst performer. He's not by far the worst actor, but I think he just completely gave up.
His character was horrible, though. I mean, get it. Like, when his performance in Con Air outshines the performance, you know, then that's saying a lot. When he connected more with the villain in Con Air than he did with this guy, I mean, come on.
Well, because there's nothing here. And I don't think the movie does a good job explaining who people are. Right. So he's,
which is weird because there's a ton of exposition throughout everything.
You're right. You're totally right. So Turnbull, who's Malkovich's character, is a Confederate general. And this is after the Civil War. I think it's supposed to be 1876. They never actually say it, but I think that's when it's supposed to be.
I mean, it's implied just because they're all wearing like uniforms from the Civil War, right?
Right. They are. But like, so they're supposed to be celebrating the centennial of the country, but the only thing they show that has any dates on it says 1868. So it threw me off a little bit. I wasn't sure if that was just an unnecessary date that somebody on the production staff put in there or whatever. But yeah, so his whole motivation is to destroy the United States of America. Not that the South should secede, but that the United States should be destroyed. That's his entire motivation. And I mean, his motivation for what he does to Hex at least makes some sense, right? Hex kills his son, so he kills Hex's family. Like, I can at least follow that.
Yeah, so that was part of the production situation. One director wanted him just to have a grudge against Jonah Hex and nothing else. He was just going to be an evil Confederate general, and you know, he's all for slavery, it's all for the South, and he hates Jonah Hex. Then somebody, the second director, came along and was like, no, we're going to have him hate the United States and have the whole cannon situation and the detonators. And I think that's where the two conflicting movies come along, is John Malkovich just hates too much stuff. It doesn't make sense.
Well, and you run into the doomsday weapon problem, where it's not easy to write in a doomsday weapon. And when you go back in time, it's even harder because it's less realistic. So here you have what's essentially, it's kind of like the weapon from The Rock that we had last week, except a lot larger in scale. And they're basically nukes that function together by having one dragon ball blow up a bunch of cannonballs.
Yeah.
Is what I gathered.
I don't think that's actually what it is.
Okay.
But I could be wrong. I just interpreted it, they were shooting the cannonballs first to make sure that the cannon is dialed in to hit where it's supposed to hit.
So I thought that until the climax, where he straight up says to fire 50 of them, and they're fired like all over the place, like where the event is happening.
Well, I guess I missed that.
I think they're like the glowing Dragon Ball is the catalyst, but I think the cannonballs are like the thing that ignites.
But we shouldn't be having this discussion. It should have been explained in the movie somehow, right?
Because they explained everything else.
Yeah, literally everything else. But then somehow they also didn't explain anything else about like a bunch of the characters. So,
well, and then like you have who's the guy who's basically the traitor the whole time? Is it Lieutenant Evan played by John Gallagher? Is that him?
What are you talking about?
I can't remember who it is. I'm drawing a blank now. There
Wes
is
Bentley's character, the aristocrat.
Yes,
gives
sorry.
Him all the money.
Yes, Lusk. What's his motivation? Why is he a traitor?
He's being threatened.
By who?
By Turnbull.
But
he has zero weapons or firepower, but he has all this money, so he's giving all this money to Turnbull.
Just so Turnbull doesn't kill him?
Yeah, and then Turnbull kills him in his second scene.
Okay. See, I didn't get that. I just thought he was like being a traitor to be a traitor, and they had never explained it. Okay.
It's also worth noting that guy has done both a DC and a Marvel movie at this point, because I believe he was also Mephistopheles and Ghost Rider.
No, he was his son, Blackheart.
Oh, that's what it was. Blackheart. Yeah. Yeah. But I recognized him. I was like, oh, that's where I know this guy from. I've never seen him in anything else, I don't think. But Ghost
Peter
Rider,
Fonda was Mephisto.
That's right.
Well, did
Which
you
is
know?
A damn good casting.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know Josh Brolin was also in a Marvel movie?
I did, yeah.
Get out of here.
Now we just need John Malkovich in there. I still want him as Kraven the Hunter.
Oh, man.
He'd be good.
Hey, I guess Michael Fassbender, not an MCU movie, but that's a Marvel movie.
What's funny is when he first shows up, I was like, that dude looks an awful lot like Michael Fassbender. But I was like, there's no way that's actually Michael Fassbender, because he would not have taken this weird-ass side role.
Well, this was right after 300, so he was not like a big deal.
But I guess I just was thinking nowadays, and like, there's no way that would be him in like this tiny little bit part. And sure as hell, it was.
It's such a weird role.
Could anybody understand a damn thing he said? Isn't he actually Irish and he can't make his accent at all?
Yeah, that was definitely like a very exaggerated version of his accent. It's also like a really weird, I don't know if I'd call it racist, but the way that like, they always have the Irishman be like the guy that's going to like fisticuff people and like stab them back in this period. I don't know if that's based in some sort of truth, but it seems like every Western has that one Irish guy that wants to stab people and punch them in the face.
As an Irish Italian woman, I am completely okay with my only ancestors being considered brawlers and gangsters, but yeah, it's a weird stereotype for sure.
Okay, can I talk about my biggest problem? Well, one of my biggest problems with this movie.
Please.
That Jonah Hex has such undefined power levels that you don't have, there's no stakes at all. Because like, he's been shot 100 times because Megan Fox goes through and like touches every bullet wound and then licks it seductively. And then she's like, well, one more and you're going to die. And then he gets shot like 17 more times and he's fine. He stumbles a little bit, has a little weird vision, but then he comes back. Then that weird fucking scene where the crow comes out of his mouth. It was like I was watching Burning Man happen right in front of me. I don't know what that was. When he's in like the Native American tent, and
I need to know if that is just racist. Like,
it seems like it is,
right? Like,
it seems so bad. And it just was so trippy and weird, out and out of place in this movie.
But even if, let's pretend for a minute it's not racist, okay? Let's just put that aside for a moment. If a Native American tribe had the ability to save people at that stage of like brink of death, wouldn't they just do that all the time for their own people
instead of white guys,
instead of some random
white
dude
guy they find on the road?
Like, how many times have we seen that in Westerns where, you know, a random group of Native Americans take this dying white person and save them with some Western medicine they've never seen before, and everything is right with the world.
Oh, it's a like, bad trope. Yeah, it's not, right? It's not good. It's problematic.
The American stereotype that the natives just helped us every single time, like, is absolutely ridiculous. You know, we never get to see us give them smallpox, but like we hear all this terrible stuff that we've done. We're like, why would they help us in any capacity?
There's literally no reason why they would.
And in this movie, it's almost like they were aware that this was going to come off racist, so they made sure that his wife was a Native American woman and they had a child together. Mm-hmm. That way it's like, well, it's not racist because he's totally cool with Native American people.
I'll say that his the makeup work for the gunshots and like birdshot on his chest looked really good.
Yeah,
I was really impressed with that, especially because a lot of movies ignore birdshot, like that it exists, and they just make like big bullet holes. But the fact that he had like the scattered shot was really cool, and it looked really good. But then immediately I was like, there's a crow coming out of his mouth. What is going on?
That belongs in a completely different movie. If Jonah Hex was in Justice League Dark, the crow coming out of his mouth, I wouldn't think anything about
that. Would have
it.
Been the least weird thing happening, right? In the movie, probably. Yeah.
And Jonah Hex belongs in the Justice League Dark. I don't know why they don't keep him there. Can we talk about the cowardice that is every decision behind Megan Fox's character of Lila?
Oh my god, don't even get me started on her.
Okay, so I don't like her as an actress. I like her as a person. Seeing her do interviews and stuff behind the scenes, I think she's amazing. I don't think she has a ton of acting talent.
She was great in Jennifer's Body, just saying.
Jennifer's Body is a really good movie. Watch that for sure. As someone who read the comic introducing Tallulah Black and Jonah Hex's romance, Tallulah Black is also disfigured and scarred. She is missing an eye, and she was drugged while she was a prostitute, and her nether bits were sliced up by actually Michael Fassbender's character. So I'm glad we didn't see that. But first of all, it's completely cowardly to and not have her also be disfigured. It could have been a really cool nod to the comics. But also, they overcorrected her in filming and post. She was 24 at the time, and she had soft lights on her everywhere, and she was completely blurred out and overcorrected.
Yeah, she looked like she was in an Instagram filter, like, or a Snapchat filter. The
like
whole time.
Three or four of them. It was bad.
It looked like the exact thing that they would use in the original Star Trek anytime they wanted to show a pretty woman, and they wanted you to know this woman's supposed to be attractive. That's what they did. But for a 24-year-old who's basically like a model attractive in a movie in 2010, it was ridiculous. Yeah.
Her whole character was, for me, a waste and a damsel. And I get that they added the stuff to make her shoot some guns and pick a lock, but she basically didn't do shit and was a damsel the whole time.
Absolutely.
Super boring. Also, like, when they revealed her name, like, it was clearly led up to be some big-ass moment that we're all like, oh! But
Tallulah!
I didn't get it? Like, no. Am I supposed to know this name from something? Because I'm pretty sure it wasn't explained anywhere else in the movie that this is somebody that we should know. It was just for like all the comic book fans to have a collective gasp at that one moment.
And even then, it's not really for comic book fans. It's really a deep cut because nobody out of Jonah Hex really has gotten equally as popular. And even Jonah Hex is not that popular.
No, it's just as weird that he's been in two live action presentations in the last 10 years for somebody who's not that popular. But yeah, that was the biggest problem I have with her, besides the damsel thing, was that her whole name reveal seemed like it was supposed to be a big moment, and I'm not sure why.
She was just like water. She added nothing to the pot here.
Except yeah, anybody, if you want an attractive woman, that's about it.
Well, that was the only qualification. I think any actor could have been in there. Yeah. Right? You need somebody who's in their early to mid-20s who's attractive. That's all that
who's willing to kiss a bunch of bullet wounds.
I guess. Fake bullet wounds on Josh Brolin, who's not an unattractive man. Like, just saying.
Yeah.
You know. I'm totally with you. Maybe Jonah Hex, the reason it's gotten two live action showings in the last decade is that because it's relatively unpopular, there's not a lot of risk for the studio to like ruin the character. They're really protective of Batman and Superman and Wonder Woman, right? But they're not really protective of Jonah Hex, because what's going to happen if they can't use Jonah Hex for a few years?
Right.
That's my guess. That's just a guess. All right. So what else? Is there anything else in this fascinating film? Oh, there's the dog. The dog is
cute. Did nothing the whole time.
Fun fact about the dog. They needed to make the dog look less cute and attractive as a dog. And so the dog had to sit through an hour of makeup before shooting each time.
The dog was a waste. I mean, it was cool. As soon as he saves the dog, I was like, oh, he saved the dog. That's great. And then immediately there's a huge explosion and I'm like, oh, the dog is dead. And then they show the dog running away. So I was like, oh, the dog's not dead. And then the dog just chases him like twice and the dog doesn't contribute anything. I was like, hopefully the dog gets to chew somebody's neck out or something, but nope.
The dog takes him to the Native Americans after he's been shot with all the shotgun pellets.
Yeah, I guess, but that's what you were setting up the whole thing with the dog for, then I mean, it seems like there's probably a better way to do that.
Yeah, that's a huge waste.
I think the dog is meant to be like, see, he's really a good guy.
I thought the dog was more like, now he has a dog in the sequel and you get to check this out. Because at the end, isn't the dog running off with him?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's like, yeah, I can't wait to see this dog do nothing for an hour and a half or 80 minutes or whatever it is. Yeah.
I'm with you. I do want to complain a little bit about how they treated Lance Reddick for a minute. So he plays the gunsmith guy. And
Lance, his name is actually Smith.
Okay.
It's horrible.
Well, he's a great actor. I love him. Watch Fringe if you haven't, because he's in that pretty heavily and he's awesome. This man is, he's in a couple of scenes. He designs all the really cool super weapons that Jonah Hex gets to use. And in the closing credits of the movie is second to last in the credits.
At least he got in the credits. Jeffrey Dean Morgan didn't even make it in the credits.
Jeffrey Dean Morgan might not have wanted his SAG name on there, to be completely honest.
But Lance had a role. He had a lot of shots trained on his face. Like, you know, he's in the movie. You see his character's kids, and he has the back and forth about, you know, how Jonah's not a racist and doesn't, you know, like slavery. Like, his character has character building done in the movie, and he's just completely tossed aside from a credit perspective, and it just bothered me.
I want to say that at the very beginning, when we first get introduced to Jonah Hex, and he rolls up on this like group of people, it's just an obvious trap, and you're like, how's he gonna get out of this? And then he fucking rips off like two miniguns attached to his horse. I was like, I am not gonna like this movie. And which sounds like the opposite of what you would think.
No,
it's but like not, without though. Any setup.
Yeah,
like, just having a horse with two miniguns that haven't been anything close to invented yet, or like there's no technology for this. It was unbelievable. And then it shows him again on that guy's work table, and you're like, oh, this guy made the horse miniguns. Now it all makes sense and I'm okay with it. But no, I'm not. That horse should have been like knocked on the ground from the recoil, from how fast those shots were. I mean, the whole thing was stupid.
Well, come on.
Why didn't they use that like the whole movie?
In the same scene, he's dodging bullets from a sniper up in the bell tower.
Again, his powers are so undefined. Like, is he immortal?
No.
Is he faster than a speeding bullet?
Possibly.
Like, what is all... I mean, he just... Those guns that he gets from the Smith that are really fucking cool and shoot, like, explosive crossbow bolts, essentially, he just throws them on the ground. It's like, you just have so much money. Where do you get all this money from that you can buy this stuff from this guy? Those miniguns couldn't have been cheap. And you never see him use them again in the rest of the movie.
I'm with you.
I mean, there's 100%. So many inconsistencies and weird things in this movie that are not explained at all.
It's bad. And even the final fight is not good. First off, the submarine boat is, I guess, basically a TARDIS, because the inside of it is a hell of a lot bigger than it seems to actually be on the outside with the weird contraptions in there. And I mean, was there any point where you didn't think John Malkovich was going to get blown up by his own weapon?
No, I knew that was going to happen.
But somehow blowing up the entire boat, the entire fucking boat, did not create a large enough explosion to kill Jonah and Lila.
I do think it would have been better if that gear just like pinched his head off.
Yeah, well, it's PG-13. I think that's the problem.
That would have been much better, though. Like, oh, great. He doesn't get killed by his own weapon. In fact, he gets his head like grotesquely pinched off in this horrible machinery accident. That would have been way better. And then you also would have known he was dead, because apparently he died before. We don't know how or what, but everybody thought he was dead.
Or even why.
Yeah, or why. Any of these things. And everybody thought he was dead, but now he's alive. So clearly this guy has the skill of dying and then coming back to life.
He faked his own death in a hotel fire so Jonah would stop coming after him.
So is that in the comic or in the movie? And I just
That's in the movie.
Okay. Well, they don't say the motivation. They just say that it happens.
So why when he's about to die, does it just... We're assuming he's dead now, because he already faked his death once. Who's to say he doesn't have some sort of fail safe in place for this? We don't know.
Right.
We also didn't talk about the strange vampire creature in the MMA fighting ring.
Yeah.
Did I forget about that?
What was that? Yeah, it's the scene with Michael Shannon.
Oh, yeah, with the snake guy.
Yeah, what is he? Is that, is he a snake guy? Is he a vampire?
Well, he was called the snake.
Okay,
or something like that. Okay. Or the Viper, something along those lines. It said it when he was getting in the ring.
What is he supposed to be?
He's a human that, like, I don't know, has had some sort of mystical... It was a mystical movie, Derek. I don't know.
Was it? The only thing mystical in the movie is Jonah Hex not dying and being able to now talk to dead people.
That's pretty mystical. Sure, and then also you add in a snake guy, then that makes two mystical things.
They're completely disconnected.
Sure, but they're both there. They both exist.
Oh, man.
There's also a crow coming out of his mouth and him not dying from that. And also the crow is an actual crow that lives and people can see.
So I have...
It was a hallucination. That would have made more sense. Anyway, sorry, Rachel.
No, you're good. I have to point out that the general he talks to, Slocum, in that whole fight scene is Dukes of Hazzard's Tom Wopat, of all people, who once hit on me at a Comic-Con.
Oh, congratulations.
I mean, who hasn't hit on Rachel at a Comic-Con, though? Let's get real.
Well, I mean, lots of people, but...
If it makes you feel any better, I've never been hit on at a Comic-Con.
I just responded with, thank you, TV's Tom Wopat, and walked away. It's like, for some reason, the way I said it, it came off as an insult. It was great.
Wow. Okay. That's a good story.
I thought so.
I'm sure our listeners think so, too.
I'm probably going to get a bad review for
it. Probably. One star. TV's Tom, from TV's Tom. He's going to give us a bad review now. Way to go, Rachel.
Look, the good news is if we get a bad review, it means somebody's listening to the show.
That's true.
At the end of the day, right?
They care so much about their 10-year-old production of Jonah Hex that they're going to listen to this. Some of those actors, Slocum, is going to listen to this.
Like, how dare this woman?
Yeah, what is her problem?
It's time to wrap things up with 2010's Jonah Hex. Any final thoughts on the movie?
Let's never watch this again.
If we're talking about the movies that we wish we didn't have to watch but in our recap episode,
yep.
Can we all just agree that this is one and we don't have to bring it up on that episode? We all just agree on it?
That's fair.
Okay. Sure.
And I want to be clear that this was Derek's idea, so...
It was. It is. I apologize. I thought it was a different movie.
That's so funny to me, because you usually think about everything so much before you like decide on it. And then this movie, you're just like, oh, it's Van Helsing. No problem. We're watching that. It's so funny to me.
Yeah, I apologize. I don't know how I confused.
We're never going to let you live this down. Just FYI. That's fine.
So
it's deserved.
It's funny because Derek said that he went to go see it because Megan Fox was hot. And then when he realized that it was Van Helsing, I looked at him and I was like, it's because you think that Kate Beckinsale's hot.
Kate Beckinsale, like, yeah, not Megan Fox. Yeah. Well, that, I
to
mean,
be
not,
fair, I find
also
them,
think Megan Fox is hot also.
I find them both very attractive.
There you go. Yeah. I knew it was coming.
I haven't seen a lot of Megan Fox's work. So, I mean, Jennifer's Body was great.
Ninja Turtles.
I mean, she's not the worst part of those movies, man.
Well, yeah, you're right, but pretty close.
You know, and I think she's fine in Transformers. There's like, she's not the problem in Transformers either. So
no, Michael Bay is.
And she was good on New Girl. She has like a, I think, 15 episode run on New Girl, and she's good on that. So I don't have any problem with
you're
her.
You're making
at all.
It sound like you've seen a lot of her work.
She's been in a lot of things.
I thought you just said that you haven't seen a lot of her work.
That's it. That's all I've seen her in.
That's basically everything she's done.
No, she's been in 40 different productions.
Oh, okay. I'm pretty sure you just named off 36 of them, but okay. You know exactly how long her episode run on New Girl was.
Yeah, because
so.
I looked last night when we were watching this movie. Mm-hmm. I was curious.
You did a lot of deep diving on that research, is all I'm saying.
I did. I try to come prepared.
Well done.
To this show. Even after 5 years. I still try and come prepared.
Van Helsing, you really came prepared.
I watched the right movie. Okay, you guys remember the time
bar,
we had?
But it's a low bar, but we got there.
Remember we had a guest on one time who thought we were talking about top robots instead of reboots and came completely prepared.
I do
with
remember
the wrong
that.
Topic?
Yes, we don't mention that name around these parts anymore.
It happens.
Then,
you know?
Just to appease him, like 6 months later, we did a top robots episode.
So
and he wasn't on
waste.
It. Was he?
Yes. Yeah. He was.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I pushed it out of my memory.
All right, so this was Jonah Hex, aka Van Helsing, and next week we are I think we're doing our look back at The Rocketeer. It's available on Disney Plus, so if you have Disney Plus, you can watch that out there. The following week we'll be discussing Tron Legacy for its 10th anniversary. I'm sure we'll talk about the first one a bit too. Again, available on Disney Plus. We are the Screen Heroes Podcast on the Heroes Podcast Network. Please follow us on Twitter at Screen Heroes Pod, and you can subscribe to the show on any number of podcast service apps like Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Podcast Addict, and more. Please go ahead and drop us a review. If you do, we will give you a shout out on the show and even read your review live on the show.
You may be wondering why we haven't talked The Mandalorian, and that's because one of our sister shows is talking about The Mandalorian. So if you love that show, and you want to listen to people that are less entertaining than us, then go over to that show and listen to those less entertaining people. And then tweet us and tell us that you'd rather have us talk about it, because I want to talk about it too.
Well, there you go. That's the Echo Station podcast. They are covering The Mandalorian. They call it The Mandafetso. So you can go and catch their episodes every other Wednesday. They'll be talking about The Mandalorian. Join us live Tuesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central on the Facebook group Screen Heroes Podcast Forum. You can chat live during the show. Thank you to those who joined us live this week. You can find me at The Star Trek Dude on Twitter if you want to talk to me about things. Ray, where can people find you?
I'm at Siren Ray on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
Ryan, where can people find you?
I'm at The Star Trek Dude, and I love Star Wars, so tweet at me all the time about this, especially the new movies. They're my favorite.
Okay, so Ryan is available at Buster Props, and if he makes this joke again, I'm going to start giving out his personal Twitter handle.
Hey, how dare you?
That is his warning on that. Again, we are the Screen Heroes Podcast. Find us at heroespodcast.com. Thanks, everyone. Have a good week. We will catch you next time.